Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Hello, and thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic of today's show is a suggestion from listener Rose Passero from South Carolina. She requested that I discuss the topic of karma and specifically how it affects our health and contributes to illness itself. Well, I want to thank you, Rose, for the suggestion. It should be a very interesting show today. I'm going to be sharing a lot of what I learned about karma when I was in that transition time of my near-death experience, and then the research that I've done about karma since I've come back to be able to better understand that is there, first of all, really good and bad karma? What is karma? And then also, is it really karma that is the predestined part of who we are, or is it merely something else? So that's the things I'm going to be sharing today and the topics I'm going to be discussing. It's all about karma. And how does that karma, if it does, affect the health and the illness or the lack of well-being in the body? So I would also like to invite you, if you have a question for me, let's finish that one first. If you have a suggestion for a show topic that you would like me to discuss, as Rose did, then I invite you to go to my website, www.ritberger.com, and submit it. And then if I do use your suggestion on air, then I'll contact you and get all of the pertinent information that I need, and I'll send you an autographed copy of my book, Healing Happens With Its Help. Healing happens with your help. Oh, my goodness. This has been the energy of today. Are any of you feeling the same thing where you kind of having trouble getting that brain and that mouth in gear? I don't know. Just maybe me, but it just felt like everything had actually started to speed up a little bit more between the dynamics of the brain and the body. Last night about 5:01 Pacific Standard Time. So how's that for being definitive? Also, I'm going to be sharing my medical intuitive skills with you. So if you have a question for me about your health, or you want to talk about the topic today and you have a question about it, I invite you to call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada, and then also international calling callers. You can use the same number, 877-230-3062. All you have to do is add your international calling code. Also, wanted to let you know that the downloads for the February Your Health Teleclass are now available for purchase on my website at www.ritberger.com, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R.com. The topic of the teleclass was Alzheimer's disease, and both of the downloads, I actually have an audio version, which was a recording of the teleclass itself, and then I have a printable PDF that is 29 pages long. Both are rich with information about how to really understand what Alzheimer's is, the symptomology behind it, some of the causes that are speculated to be the triggers for Alzheimer's disease. I say it that way because there's a tremendous amount of research that is now taking place of the fact that we have so many baby boomers that are going to be entering into those memory loss years. And then also our parents are living a lot longer. So the type of care they require both physically and mentally is something that's on the front burner because it's changed significantly over the course of time. So, in the downloads, I offer information to help you discern if memory loss is merely forgetfulness, if it's part of the normal aging dementia that we experience to some degree. Actually, that normal aging dementia really, in the research I found, begins as young as 30 years old, when a lot of the cells in the brain actually start to atrophy. As a result, we may not be as quick to be able to recall short-term memory. But when we're talking about the normal aging process of dementia, then what we're really talking about is we're talking about those long-term memories that help us really relate to our physical world and to be able to remember such things as that we wear glasses. So forgetfulness is where you forgot you put the glasses. dementia is the fact that you forget that you wear glasses, and Alzheimer's is, do you wear glasses, where do you live, and can you find either one? So again, some interesting information. And then how the metaphor of loss may contribute psychologically to the development of Alzheimer's disease. And then also a whole list of alternative choices that you can begin right now to be able to delay the onset of Alzheimer's, especially if you have a genetic predisposition for it. And what we're finding also is a lot of these different alternative choices could even, in fact, prevent you from getting Alzheimer's disease altogether. As always, there's a try before you buy feature, so you can actually listen to part of the audio download and actually read the first page of the preview itself. Be sure it's something that you're really interested in. And I do encourage you, if it is, that you go ahead and you purchase it, available again online. But also, it may be something in the printable PDF that if you have a family member or a family, or you yourself have a family member that has Alzheimer's, or someone who is showing the signs of Alzheimer's, then it might be information that you'd want to share with them. So again, that's available on www.ritberger.com. Webster's Dictionary defines karma as the force generated by a person's actions and its consequences that will determine their destiny and their next existence. Well, what I've learned is I do agree with part of that definition from the standpoint that karma is a force. Actually, it's a vibration of thoughts and memories that's really generated by a person's actions. However, what I do have found in the transition, when I was in that transitional stage in my near-death experience, is that when we're in light, there are no consequences that are attached to the memories and thoughts that we deemed important for us to take from our physicalness into our world of energy. So what happens is that there's no consequences as a result, that when you come back into a physical life, that doesn't mean that karma is going to determine the quality of your life. It only determines the memories that you're going to bring back from the past. So when I was in my near-death experience, what I realized is that prior to the process of actually, you know, exiting from our physicalness, the lifetime that we spend is a lifetime that is just a series of thoughts with emotions attached to them and experiences that basically generate outcomes from those thoughts, those emotions, those experiences, and that life is really a repetition of that same process. However, over the course of our life, we tend to create a common theme, and that means a pattern of situations that we seem to repeat over and over again. Now, karma is part of that process of repeating those processes and those patterns and those experiences over and over again. And the purpose of karma is to help us really refine who we are. But in that process, when we're in light, it's merely just information. When we come into the physical form in our next life, all we do is bring forth that information. We don't have the capacity in light to be able to experience emotions as we do in our humanness. So say we get a theme in our life that we seem to be repeating over and over again. That theme has a repetition over and over again of similar emotions. Those emotions could be positive, they could be negative. And that's how we deem that repetition karma as being good or being bad. Meaning, are we in alignment with ourself in that joyful, peaceful place? We call that good karma. Or are we suffering, which is what we call bad karma? So in reality, that karma itself literally isn't responsible for what impacts our life as far as whether we feel good or bad about it. But what it does is we bring that karma, those memories, into our existence, into our form, to be able to help us learn more about who we are, to be able to refine who we are, to be able to learn from our experiences so we can grow and expand both physically in our personal development, and then also energetically in our spiritual evolution and development. So again, karma is merely information. And once we cross over into form, there's no judge and jury or anything or anyone on the other side in the form of souls or even the universal love that is felt there, that basically starts the process of trying to punish or trying to keep us in a place of suffering when we're in light. In fact, suffering is something that we can't even experience when we're in light. When I talk about karma and I talk about reincarnation, please understand that it isn't my intention to offend any of you who don't believe in reincarnation. There's many religions that don't. So what I ask you to do is to listen to the information in a way that maybe you can find something within the information that can answer, maybe help you find the answer to a question that you've had a long time over the fact that you seem to repeat certain patterns. And whether you want to call it karma or whether you want to refer to it as past life information, it's karma is really those reoccurring themes that we have in our life that are really designed by our own choice to be able to help us to transform, transmute, meaning changing the habits that are associated with it, the limitations, and then being able to transcend, meaning rising above and moving beyond. So when you think about karma, just think about it as patterns and nothing else. First of all, it's really a merely of collection of thoughts that are created by our words and deeds that we do on the earthly plane. And the interesting part of karma is that if we look at it as merely information, you may find yourself at different times within your life saying, you know, I'm not going to ever come back and do this again. I want this to be done, fini, been there, done that, through, cross it off the list. We are not going to do this again. However, you may find that you do it again, not only waiting for the next life, but you do it again in this life. And what you're really being asked to do is to change the emotional charge by shifting the perception of that core theme, of that pattern of limitation or those habits. So then you can actually do your karmic work, which is releasing, it's experiencing, it's releasing the emotional charge that we attach to those different experiences. And that's the experience, those are the experiences and the memories that we take when we cross back into light. So they're merely vibration. That's nothing more. That's what karma really is. And it's of information that's void of any kind of emotional charge. Now, when we do cross over into light, we do take the memories that really have been of greatest significance to us in our own personal growth and our spiritual evolution. All the minutiae, all the things that we say we're not going to come back and do again, all of those negative charge things that we've, you know, just feel so strongly about because we've been sad or we've experienced sorrow or we've experienced suffering. That information can go with you as well. But again, remember, it's just merely information that you have as a resource to be able to draw upon in other incarnations. However, stating that also, you can use that same perception in doing your work on the earthly plane at this moment in time. One of the things I want to share with you was a story that I experienced personally from the standpoint of trying to understand why I died and why I came back and the fact that it made coming back in this world seem almost impalatable to me from the standpoint that I was so hypersensitive in my abilities and my empathic skills that not only was I dealing with my own sadness and sorrow, but I could literally feel the sadness and the sorrow and the suffering at levels that I couldn't even mentally comprehend. So when I came back from the experience, I don't know, I guess in my arrogance, I thought that the fact that I came back and it was my choice that somehow I was going to be one of the chosen ones that wasn't going to have to experience life itself and all the dramas, traumas associated with it, how quickly that changed within literally a few days. But what I did is I started realizing that in my own life that I could start to see the patterns that were shown to me when I was in light. The pattern, first of all, that I try to make life into brain surgery, and I always try to complicate everything. It's almost as though I can justify my existence by doing so. I've learned now that that's part of the neurology of my personality. And if I look at it as a negative, then it will be such. But if I look at it as a tool of discernment to help me realize that life can be simple, and if it becomes complex and I make it that way, then I'm probably going to experience the emotions of sadness and sorrow, and I'm going to suffer. So what I did is I kept working on this at a personal level. That's what we all do. But I knew that if I could work at this on a personal level and find those little glimpses of hope or those processes that I could personally use to be able to change my habits and behavior and way of thinking, and to be able to address and change my core themes, then I could literally evolve into the teacher that I know that I am. I knew that before I died, but I had a better understanding of what that looked like in that transitional time and what I would do when I came back into form. But there was a part of the whole process of karma and repetition and core themes that I, and the negative emotions, I just couldn't seem to get a handle on. And I literally struggled with it. So one night, about 6-7 years after I had the near-death experience, I had a very vivid dream. And in that dream, I could literally feel that last heartbeat, which is what I remember the most prior to going into light. And it startled me and it woke me up. And I thought, oh my gosh, am I dying again? Is this a repetition of what I did before? I immediately went in and thought, am I not getting it? Have I done something wrong? You know, did I make life too complicated? All those questions that we ask ourselves. I went back to sleep and the dream continued as to where I felt it after that lost heartbeat. In that process of the dream, I remember as I was watching myself in this dream, is I was watching as I was sitting kind of in this car wash, this conveyor belt of what looked like at one point the form of humans. And I could find this conveyor belt moving along with these forms of humans moving along, and the conveyor belt would stop. And then at that point in time, the souls would start to run around and they would start to look in kind of a frenzied way, and they would find this bag that they had with them. And what they would do is they would dive into the bag and they would start throwing whatever it was in the bag out. And I remember laughing. I've got a lot of childhood memories around the fondness of playing musical chairs, about the fact of Santa Claus. I mean, my goodness, even at my age, I still on some level believe that there is, you know, this place where we can find this joyfulness and the gifts of life, whether that's Santa Claus or not. So this dream incorporated a lot of the positive things that I had from my childhood to help me understand what I was literally seeing. So these forms would throw themselves into these bags and stuff would start to fly out of it. And then the music would start again. The conveyor belt would move on. And then the forms would continue to stand still, the music would stop, and it would repeat the process over and over again. Well, one of the things that I have since learned is that music is a beautiful vibration that allows us to just be. And the music that I heard in the dream itself was literally the message to me, Carol, just be still, observe, and then you will be able to find the changes and create the changes you're looking for. When I was in the near-death experience, I was visited by three balls of light. They were actually orbs. They stayed with me and they comforted me, meaning that I could feel their love, but they also held a place for me to be able to help understand what was happening. So I remember in this dream turning to these balls of light, these orbs, and saying to it, that is so funny. What are they doing? And they said, they're clearing. And I thought, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, what occurred is that the music started again, but then the music changed. The music became very ominous. It was very mysterious. It was very foreboding, and it became very frightening to me, and it woke me up. And I remember getting up and thinking, okay, I'm done with this dream. Don't want to go there again. And I went to another room, and I sat down. My heart was racing. All of the same things I experienced prior to leaving my body in the near-death experience were happening physically. I was awake. I didn't know if I was having adrenaline, whether I was going to have that heart stop again, whether I was going to die, and it was a terrifying moment. And I thought to myself, be gone. I don't want this anymore. I don't want this ability. I don't want this dream. I don't want to do this anymore. And all of a sudden, I heard the voice, be still. And in that stillness, I was able to watch the process continue wide awake of these forms on the conveyor belt, jumping in the bag, throwing themselves into the work that was in the bag and throwing things out. And the closer they got to the other side of the tunnel or the conveyor belt, then the lighter they were. And all I saw was bright light. And I asked the orbs, the guides that were with me, what does this mean? And they said to me that all of our life is a series of experiences. Those experiences you hold in your mind, that is the bag. In those experiences, you have emotional charge that are associated to those experiences. Those are the gifts. When you're ready to change, whether you're in form or you're in the process of going from form to light, you are continually throwing yourself into the mire and the muck of your mind to be able to find the emotions that are limiting you, the emotions that are keeping you hostage to your past or to the comfort zones that don't allow you to expand your perception. So I remember thinking or saying to myself, then all we're doing and what I'm observing is I'm observing the process of karma. And they said, exactly. Karma is the bag. It's the memories. Karma has no emotions. When you come into form, your bag grows. When you go into light, your bag becomes small. And one of the things, Carol, if you were to observe, which I then did, is that when the form moves into light, there is no bag. And I asked about that, and they said, everything that you deemed of value to you, that you learned so much about your life, that will help you in being of service to others, both in light and in next incarnations, is embodied as karma in the vibration of your soul. And that is a resource for you to use to determine what you choose to work on when you come into the next incarnation. So that, to me, is what karma is. It isn't good. It isn't bad. It literally is the memory of all of the things that we did in our lifetime to be able to move ourselves forward, to be able to use those tools and what we learn from it to be able to be of service for others. And what I found is that when we come back into form, then we do bring those memories. But because we don't have the capacity in life to experience emotions, we do not bring in the emotional memories or the charges associated with those memories. So if we were to just step back and take karma out of the realm of something that's going to be the consequences and predetermine our destiny for future existences, and look at karma as being an everyday event, then the perception that we have of it is going to shift tremendously. And what it will do is it will help us see that the negative emotions are really our greatest gifts, believe it or not, because they do require over the course of time that we let go of what's not serving us well. Different perception, again, not to change any of your perceptions that you have or to minimize your religion or your religious beliefs. I just wanted to share a different perception, and I'm going to be doing that in the next segment as well. But I'd like to start out with Linda from New York. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling me.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm very good. And you, my love?
I'm okay. It's nice talking to you.
You're welcome. You know, I could feel your energy. All of a sudden, it went like, why is she asking me that? She's supposed to know that. She's the medical intuitive. I mean, how am I? Anyway, how can I help you, sweetie?
Well, I have this lovely fibroid, and I'm 50 years old, and I'm trying to decide if I should just let it go or if I should have surgery on it. It just seems to get bigger and bigger. I've had a consultation with a doctor, and he seems to think that I should kind of wait it out. I just want to get your thoughts on it.
Very good. Well, first of all, fibroids in my world as a medical intuitive are kind of like that bag that I was talking about in that process of that dream. That fibroid is literally a toxic site that is basically holding information that you didn't know maybe what to do with or where to put it. It's a chemical process in the human body, so it isn't just psychological. But for me, fibroids are toxic dump sites. They're places that we put things on hold until we get around to it. The unfortunate part is we usually don't get around to it psychologically. From the standpoint of the fibroid itself, I would, and I'll go physically first, I would agree with the doctor. I would take a wait and see attitude. And the main reason for that, from a physical standpoint, is there's two reasons behind it. One is that fibroids tend to be, women who have estrogen, who are estrogen dominant, tend to have a predisposition to create fibroids or fibrocystic cyst. Now, fibroids and fibrocystic cyst are one and the same in many ways, but very, very different. So in the course of your process of your reproductive cycles itself, my sense is that you have always had a higher level of estrogen that has basically dominated the functioning of the physicalness of your reproductive organs and the well-being of your body, meaning moods and the chemistry changes associated with it. When a female goes into menopause, and in perimenopause it begins and actually enters into menopause, we of course get that depletion of the production of estrogen, and many times the fibroids that have been lingering from a physical standpoint start to basically shrivel up, dry up, and don't become a problem at all for most women. Now, if it's something that you just don't like having in your body, then you could certainly go in and, you know, explore other alternatives. But personally, I feel the same as your doctor, that I would just take a wait and see attitude, because in reality, while it feels like it's growing, in the reality, it isn't. It's just changing its positioning. And in doing so, think of it as a balloon that's been really, really inflated for a long time. The balloon starts to deflate. Maybe it's very slow that it goes into the process. And then the more and more it deflates, then the more it's going to sag, or it's going to put pressure in other areas, which may very well be what you're feeling. The other part of the actual physical part of a fibroid itself is that the fibroid can go in and it can basically just be kind of a bubble on the endometrial lining if we're looking at fibroids in the uterus, or it could be a holding place for maybe a fluid buildup in the breast area itself. So there are some physical ramifications, but I would agree with the doctor, sweetie. If you're comfortable with it and you can live with it, it is benign. There is nothing to be concerned about. It's actually been there for a long time. It appears that when you started into the perimenopausal process, probably somewhere in your late 30s, early 40s, your estrogen was just going berserk on you. And what it'd do is it'd fill the balloon up, and then it'd deflate, and then it'd fill it up, and then it would deflate. My sense is it's in the deflation process right now. But what it is doing is in the deflating. It's actually creating, it feels like almost a sensation, maybe a little bit of a feels almost like a pressure that it's actually putting on. So yeah, that's the other thing. The other part of it is what I have consistently found is a medical intuitive in fibroids, whether they're in the uterus or the breasts themselves, there's a consistency of three different emotions in the fibroid. The first one is shame. And shame can be something as simple in the course of our life as a child. We did something and someone said something like, shame on you for doing that. That's where that shame can start in a very innocuous way and build off of it. The next emotion that I find in the fibroids itself is guilt. And then the third emotion that I find in the fibroid is sadness. Now, that pretty much runs the gamut of every single one of us, doesn't it, sweetie?
Yeah, it does.
It's just that some of us build on that shame, that guilt, and that sadness to the point where it may undermine our psychological or physical well-being. And the body is so exquisite from the standpoint that it'll actually create these holding tanks. And that's what a fibroid is, until we get around to working on what we came here to work on, which may very well be shame, guilt, or sadness. All three, maybe just one. As we evolve into our skin, as we get older, then we realize that there's nothing really to be ashamed of. Or maybe that the guilt is part of our human plight and it isn't something we're born with. Or the sadness that we feel maybe isn't necessarily the sadness for ourselves. It's the sadness for the universe. It's the sadness for all humans that basically stay trapped in suffering. So again, those are the three different emotions. Now, what can you do with that information? You can go in and we can perform a little bit of energetic liposuction. Choose one of those emotions if you relate to it and literally let it go.
Okay.
And you can work with it that way.
I was just concerned because it's about 7 centimeters thick.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly small frame. And
correct.
It almost feels like I'm pregnant. But I don't think I'm even close to menopause. I still have a regular period and everything. So
Are, sweetie. You have a regular one, but you still you are in the process of your hormones changing.
Okay.
So my sense is the doctor wants to go in and take this wait and see to just see if there's going to be any changes that are going to occur. Has the doctor talked to you about maybe birth control pills?
No, and I don't think I'd be interested.
Okay. A lot of times they will do that because it helps regulate, even when it's in the decline, the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Now, the other thing is that if you decide to go in and decide that this is something that you just are too uncomfortable with, that you don't want to have that, you know, toxic buildup, whatever metaphor that you get with it, and that you decide that you're going to go in and you're going to have it removed, then what you can do is then just go in and pack any shame that you've had throughout your entire life, pack it in that trunk, any guilt that you felt that you really wasn't your guilt, that you're really aware of that belonged to somebody else guilting you, pack that in that trunk and that fibroid. And if there's any kind of sadness that you have around yourself and not being worthy and feeling like life has not been exactly what you wanted and you've let yourself down, blah, 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 pack that in that trunk, and then when you decide to have it go, then just have the whole thing go, sweetie.
All
you
right.
can do that as well. One of the things Edgar Cayce did, and I just got this from your body, is that what you could also do, have you used castor oil packs at all to be able to pull any toxins or that are building up in the connective tissue around it, pulling those toxins out so it doesn't add to it?
Yeah, I did try it for a little while on and off. And then I kind of felt like nothing was, you know, coming from it.
Okay. Okay. Then, and you know, again, if that doesn't work for you, then throw it out and then, you know, continue to find something. One of the things I'd be remiss if I didn't do this, I would ask you to give yourself a time frame. Your doctor wants to take a wait and see.
Okay.
How long can you live with that, sweetie, if you decide to take a wait and see? If you can live with it for only 3 months before you want to go and do something, know very clearly in your own mind what your time frame is, and then don't allow myself or the doctor or anybody else to overstep any kind of boundaries with you to the point where we can influence what you have already really. And you have made your mind up as far as getting rid of it. You really have.
Right.
So from that standpoint, you know, just another perception, another situation. If it's something you can't live with, then act upon it. If it's something that you don't really, you're not really sure, you're not sure that you don't have enough information, then put the time frame on it. And then talk to your doctor. Call your doctor and say, okay, I can take a wait and see for this long. And let your doctor know that. And then you can... both you and your doctor can work as a team then.
So you're not sure, is there anything you can tell me about when this menopause is going to start happening for me? Like fully?
It's already started.
Okay.
The hormone changes have already started. The estrogen is already in the decline.
Okay.
And as a result, then it may very well be that it will shrink, whether it goes away completely, that's where what your doctor doesn't know, and even what I don't know, sweetie.
Okay.
So again, just give yourself a time frame. Thank you for calling me, and you have a wonderful day. And again, pack everything in it you don't need, sweetie. If you decide to get rid of it, just, you know, send it out the door with it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right. Let's go ahead and jump into a quick commercial break. I'm going to be right back, and I'll talk a little bit more about how karma really does or doesn't affect your health and well-being.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Welcome back. If you're just joining me today, I'm talking about the relationship between karma, health, and illness. It was a topic that was suggested by a listener. If you have a topic that you would like me to cover on one of my shows, I encourage you to go to my website, www.reitberger, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R.com. If I use your suggestion on air, I will gather the pertinent information and send you an autographed copy of my book, Healing Happens With Your Help. I'm also going to be taking your calls, so if you have a question for me, you can call me at 877-230-3062. If you find that the lines are busy, please don't give up. I try to get through as many calls as I can, and we'll just put you on hold just for a very short period of time, and I'll try to get to you. Also, I'd like to invite you to join me in an event that I have happening April 9th in Andover, Massachusetts. It's actually an event for the theme of 2011, which is Finding Your Way. The event is called Finding Your Way, Intuitive Messages for the Mind, Body, and Spirit. I'm going to be sharing the stage with a friend of mine, psychic medium John Holland, and then also a newfound friend. I actually have had her on the air, Lauren Rainbow, who is also a psychic medium. What Lauren's going to be doing is she's going to be talking about the power of the mind and how to be able to utilize the mind and the thoughts of the mind to be able to help you find your way. I'm going to be talking about the messages of the body and how that inner guidance that we all have literally speaks to us through the messages of the body. And then John is going to be talking about how we can connect with that spiritual part of who we are and how we can connect with the messages that our spirit guides are sending us and to be able to use that information in a way that can help you find your own way. Going to be a day full of information, a lot of sharing. There's going to be drawings by each of us within our segments for a free reading. So if you've been wanting to have a reading with any of us, it's a good opportunity for you to do so. And then also an opportunity to spend the day with us. And at the end of the day, all three of us are going to be on stage and we're going to be taking questions from the audience. Should be a lot of fun, an enlightening day, and one that we're all hoping, John, Lauren, and myself, is going to help you understand your inner guidance and those messages from it, and then also how to find your own way. If you would like more information or you'd like to register, just go to my website, www.reitberger.com. I actually, in the What's New section, you will find a little announcement of it. Just click on it. It'll take you to the registration page, and I hope you'll join me. If you're thinking about it, find more information. If you'd like to do it, I encourage you to save your seats. They are limited. So we'll be all three of us will be able to really interact in a very personal way and be able to enjoy each other's company. So if you're thinking about it or you'd like to register, again, www.reitberger.com. There's also an icon on the right-hand side of my homepage. Just click on it and register, and then spend the day with the three of us. It should be a lot of fun and a very enlightening day. One of the questions that I've always been asked as a medical intuitive is that, does karma really determine whether we become ill or not, or what illnesses we get, or does it determine how and what we're going to die of? The thing that I have found is that karma really per se does not determine any of those factors. What karma does is that it creates themes or processes or repetition of thoughts or experiences that we individually and then in service to others want to work on. What I found as a medical intuitive, it isn't those memories that create illness to the body or that can create good health to the body, but it's the emotional charges that we associate with those repetitive patterns. The more we repeat the patterns, the stronger the emotional charge becomes. If the emotional charge is positive, then we experience good health. If the emotional charge is negative, then we experience ill health. So what I found is that even looking beyond that, emotions set the tone. The tone sets the attitudes. And in my world as a medical intuitive, karma doesn't create illness, nor do thoughts create illness, nor does emotions. But really what is responsible for the lack of well-being in the body are the attitudes that we develop based on karma, based on thoughts, based on emotions. And it's those attitudes that really create the habits that keep us locked into patterns of behavior that either are healthy in the lifestyle that we do and the way that we live our life psychologically and physically, or they basically rob us of the energy that we need in order to have a positive attitude toward different parts of life. So really, when it comes into health or illness, karma really isn't the underlying, isn't really the culprit behind it. It's merely the memory of what we chose here to do. It's that information that's on our to-do list. Another question that I'm asked consistently is, why do children come into this world with karma, bad karma that causes them to be ill or to experience cancer or to be able to have severe health issues in a way that they are not able to live a full, rich life the way that we as humans and parents and people who care about our fellow human beings? Why is it that children seem to come in with all these physical ailments that really alter the way they live their life? I mean, what bad karma that is. And one of the things that I share is a personal story with myself in regards to my granddaughter who was born, and we didn't know it until she was 2 years old, with congenital muscular dystrophy. And where we, over the course of the lifetime at 2 years old, when she first became ill, and we started really noticing a lot of the things that she wasn't able to do as a child at 2 years old, we had those indicators, but we thought maybe she was a late bloomer or whatever else. We started noticing these things and she became ill. And at that point in time, then what they basically said is that she has congenital muscular dystrophy. Even though it took them a long time to finally really produce the results to support that, and that she will be lucky to live till 3 years old. And my daughter and I, when we would sit and have our, you know, very deep conversation, she would ask me, "Mom, why would Ashley have chosen such a route in life that basically is going to limit the time that she's on this earth plane, or to not be able to connect in a way that we want to, you know, for our children, and to be able to live a full, rich life and live a long life and so forth?" And she said, "This is really bad karma." And I said to her, "I can certainly understand why you see it that way. I have questioned it myself. But I do believe that our little Ashley chose this particular pattern in her life to be able to be of great value and help to us." And she looked at me in this strange way and she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, so you and I and our family will value the things that, frankly, we take for granted, the things that Ashley, at 5 years old, couldn't even move. And then one day we looked down, we were in the kitchen working together, and here was Ashley at our feet. And we both looked at each other and thought, this child hasn't even been able to roll over, to move. She can't lift herself up. She can't basically do anything. How could she possibly have gotten over here? And we watched her. The grace of who she is, she found another way to be mobile. She would sit upright. She was able to still support herself at that time, even though she couldn't pick herself up from the laying down position. And she scooted on her bottom faster than probably any 3-year-old or 5-year-old or 6-year-old could either scoot or walk. So what I've found is I found that what Ashley has taught us over the course of time is to be able to really appreciate the subtle things and to be able to remember that even in life, when we're given a disadvantage, such as a health situation, that that disadvantage is a wonderful gift for the people around them, because what it does is it helps us remember what truly is important, the subtle things. When Ashley was first able to brush her hair, I thought, my goodness, I've been brushing my hair for a long time. I certainly have taken that for granted. When Ashley learned how to brush her own teeth, that was something else that was that we take for granted. All the things that we, you know, take for granted at one point in time when she went into a wheelchair and she finally had that mobility she was looking for and was cruising around the house. She went into the pantry and I could hear this squealing as my daughter could. And we said, oh my gosh, what is that noise? And we found Ashley in there and we asked her, Ashley, what's wrong? And she said, nothing. It's the first time I've ever been able to see what's in this pantry and why you keep pulling out all these things that I love. Simple, simple things. I need to tell you that Ashley is 14 years old and is going to be 15 this year. And what she has taught us is that in that karma, she's taught us about appreciation. She's taught us about love. She's taught us about not taking things for granted, the simple things that we do. And what I found also is that while someone may come in with these challenges throughout their life, that the divine creator of all that exists does offer them and give them another source of fulfillment. While our little Ashley won't be as mobile as most children or as a teenager experiencing the different things, she is a very, very bright light with a very, very bright mind. The child's IQ is unbelievable. Her abilities to be able to connect the dots, her abilities to be able to work on the computer, things that most children would never get to experience. But because of Ashley and what she chose to work on in this lifetime, meaning to be of service to others, and then to be able to be of value in her own work and to realize that sometimes the running around from one thing to the other doesn't allow us to be able to appreciate either what we have or where we are at any point in time. And Ashley and I've talked about this. We have a wonderful connection. And I said to her one day around her 13th birthday, Ashley, do you believe that you came in with this? And she said, oh, I know I did, Grandma. And I said, and why did you? And she said, so I can learn to be in my body, and maybe I can teach you, Grandma, that is always so busy, to learn to be in your body. Whew. Makes me cry then, made me cry now. That is what it's all about. So as we look at children who come in with these different issues, maybe we can step back and shift our perception of karma and so forth. So again, just some information that I felt that might be of value to help us shift the perception of how we see life, because 2011 is literally a year of that, and it's a year for us to be able to free ourselves from what we perceive as bad karma to be able to live a life that's rich and full. Oh, I have to take a deep breath after that one. What a beautiful light. She's taught me a lot, and it surprises me. I don't know why I say that, but it does. That surprises me that I can still learn the simple things of life. So let's jump in. Joellen from Chicago, sweetie. Thanks for calling me. How can I help you?
Gosh, I hate to be asking any questions after that story. It was
no, you go for it, sweetie, because what she did, oh, and thank you for that. But what Ashley did through that process is she shared with me so I stay on track when I give up hope. And then I want you to stay on track to be able to understand what you're working with. So how can I help you, sweetie?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about karma, and you know, not along the lines of my health, but a partnership, and kind of wondering why is it I am waiting so long and still, you know, at my age, you know, you were bringing up perimenopause. You know, I'm 44 at the end of this month, but I still want to have kids, but I'm not in a relationship yet. So I kind of wondered, you know, was that karma? Before I started hearing your reasoning for it, but, you know, I'm wondering, is this so I can learn patience and compassion, or, you know, what's...
Well, those are that's a very valid question, and it's a question, thank you for bringing forward, because... Can all of us learn patience and compassion? One of the things that if you go back and you look at your life and you look at and look for a core theme, one of the things that I can tell you ever since you were in the womb, sweetie, one of the things that you've always been looking for in your life is true love. Mm-hmm. And that's a theme. And when you were in the womb of your mother fought, it feels to me, she fought very hard to be able to keep you. It feels like maybe she had some different times when it, you know, it was really, you know, am I going to keep her? Am I not? Meaning, is my body going to accommodate this or not? She really went against a lot of the things that she thought as far as beliefs around herself. So your mother really has given you a lot of strength of character, even in the womb, for you to be able to find that true love. My sense is that's your core theme. That's your karma. And in that process, you've experienced love to different degrees, but what you haven't experienced is true love. And that's what you're here to define. And if you can define that in one little minuscule way, and you can share that within yourself and your thoughts to the universe and others, then maybe you can help me and you can help others find what true love means. You've touched love on many different levels, but not the purity of love that you're looking for. So what I encourage you to do is to really look at love. What does it look like to you? Define it. What would true love feel like? What would it mean? Would it mean never having to say you're sorry, kind of like that movie? Would it mean that you could accept and others would accept you unconditionally? Does it mean that we can allow the differences and allow the autonomy and independence and still remain committed in a healthy relationship? So being a late bloomer doesn't mean that it's been bad karma for you. It's just part of the dynamics, it feels to me, that is your work that you came here to do individually in your own self, and then through that can shift the perception and consciousness around love, true love. Instead of always looking for love outside, begin inside. Once you know inside what you need, then it changes what you look from out, you look for outside. Now, there is a person that feels like that they were in your life maybe when you were somewhere, maybe late 20s, early 30s. Did you have a person in your life then?
No one in particular that I really,
no. A friend, someone that you could just hang with, share with. There was something, there was a kindredness in this person that was very, very deep. It didn't have to maybe manifest in something that was physical and, you know, skyrockets and, you know, sparklers or anything, but there felt to me that there's a person that there was a gentleness, a kindness, a place of just being. That is what one of the key things you're looking for in a relationship. You might want to spend some time, especially with the energy of 2011, you might want to spend some time creating what your true love would look like, what that true love would act like, how you would feel being involved in a relationship with true love, what true love would look like as you got older, what it would look like tomorrow, what it looked like from 10 years or 20 years. You might want to spend some time. And I think what you'll do, honey, when you do that and you start looking at true love, you're going to start to realize how much you've really learned about love, and then create that person. Create that person. I can tell you that you actually have in your field, you have a message. It's kind of like a vibe mail that's out there that says, I am looking for dot, 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 dot. Don't, you know, send picture, you know, to let me know what you look like. But more importantly, send me how you feel about love. And that's a vibe mail that you have out there. So the message is out there. You're looking.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I keep going back to that age time with that person that feels like they were an integral part of your life, that that's the foundation of the message you're sending, and you can build off of that foundation.
And it's, I still have time for children, right?
Yes. Now, you heard me hesitate, and I hesitated for a couple of reasons. You have time for children. What I don't know is I don't know whether you have the biological time that you're looking for to be able to carry your own child. If that is important to you, then I request that you expand your perception of all of the limitations that you may have around, you know, the way that it should be versus the way you want it to be. Maybe the child is the true love you're looking for. Maybe that child will come in the form of being attached to someone. Maybe it will come in the form of you being a single parent. Maybe it will become in the form of adopting a child. But yes, there will be a child. There is a child in your field. What I don't know is I don't know how strongly, because I keep hitting this barrier, about the limitations and the beliefs you have around being able to fulfill that part of your destiny. And that's something for you to think about as well. And again, it isn't for me to really ask you to change any values that you have. But sweetie, you do have the message out there. There is a child in your field. And I share that with you so you can determine the next step of action for you to be able to experience true love. So Joellen, lots of things to think about. I'm sorry, sweetie, I've run out of time.
Well,
but thank you so much for that. All of you, thank you so much for joining me and always supporting my work and listening to my show. I hope you have a wonderful week. I'll see you next week on the radio every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Light and love to all of you.
You've been listening to The Carol Rideberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.rideberger.com. That's www.rideberger.com. See you soon.